If you like weird history, true crime, haunted and paranormal, then pause the podcast you're listening to right now and subscribe to Ghost Town wherever you listen to podcasts. We also have a video component to our favorite Ghost Town episodes at youtube.com/Jason Horton. Episodes like The Los Feliz Murder House, The Toxic Lady, The Black Dahlia, Janis Joplin's Hotel Room, The Haunted Roosevelt Hotel, and more. Just go to youtube.com/Jason Horton. That's youtube.com/JasonHorton. And while you're there, please subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. Thank you.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7. It's Friends Without Benefits. Friends Without Benefits.
It's the Friends Without Benefits podcast. My name is Jason Horton. Welcome to the show. Today, my guest is Freddie Alva. Freddie has a new documentary called The New Breed Documentary, based on the New Breed compilation. And he has a documentary based on that and reconnecting with the bands. And always excited to talk to people from the hardcore scene, whether it's from back in the day or now. I'm just looking to do more of that. And I want to thank my friend Carlos Ramirez from NoEcho.net, for connecting me with Freddie. And this interview is going to be a little bit different. Freddie and I were going to connect. He's in New York, but we were going to connect when he was out here in LA promoting the documentary. But I was in Florida at the time, I think. So I still wanted to do this, and I don't want to be limited to who I could talk to based on location. I also do not like talking on the phone if I don't have to. So what I did is I sent Freddie some questions, and then he answered them. So this is going to be it'll be conversational in a way, but it's more of a Q&A, but the information is great. Freddie is super knowledgeable on a lot of things. He is a graffiti artist. He has a book out called Urban Styles, Graffiti in New York Hardcore. You can get it on Amazon. He also is involved in Eastern medicine, acupuncture, and we get into that too, because I'm always curious. Like, I've had plenty of acupressure, acupuncture. I've gone to herbalist. I've always had issues with migraines over the years, so that was something that I always kind of tried to, I don't want to say attack on different fronts. It's probably the wrong word to use. Maybe that's why I have migraines. So we get into a little of that as well. Friends Without Benefits has been on Apple Podcasts New and Noteworthy in the comedy section for a while now. It's just there, and it's in really good company with a lot of other great podcasts, and it seems like they shift around and add new ones, but I'm still there for some reason. I don't know what it means, what the significance is, but I'm not complaining by any means. Pretty cool. I guess as of right this second, it is still there, and it's been there for a few weeks. I mentioned I have another podcast. I don't want to inundate you with too many podcasts, but they all have my voice. You won't be able to tell the difference, I guess, aside from the content. And I have a co-host, Rebecca, but it's the Ghost Town podcast, or just called Ghost Town, but it's a podcast. And we got a nice review in the AV Club, which they gave an episode of Friends Without Benefits a nice review as well. And this one, they gave a nice review to our Comedy Store episode. I think we have 5 episodes up. I believe we have 5 episodes up, and it's going really well. People seem to really like it. You can check out Ghost Town at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast, and you can check out the social, because there is a visual component to it, because, you know, the things we're illustrating in these episodes of Ghost Town, there's also just sharing interesting things that are abandoned, haunted, mysterious, and we're forming a nice community if you're into that kind of stuff. And even if you don't think you are, you might be. We have a lot of really good episodes coming out. So you can check out the Ghost Town social media. I sound like such a square when I said that. Just, I know it. I sound like a narc of the internet. But the Ghost Town socials, it's all Ghost Town Pod, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And we have a Patreon for that because we want to do some traveling with that. And if you want to support, it's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. On that show, we talk about things that are a little bit scary, but I'll tell you what's not scary, RX Bar. I'm still eating RX Bar. I've been eating RX Bar. You've heard me mention before, and I'm still eating RX Bars because they're good. But beyond me just liking them and the fact that I think they're good is that RX Bar wants to build things the right way. They believe in the power of transparency and lets the core ingredients do all the talking with all of them listed on the front of the packaging. You know how some will hide it in very small lettering in the back? No, they put it right there up front. It should make you confident. They're the ones that have egg whites for protein, dates to bind, nuts for texture, and other delicious ingredients like unsweetened chocolate, real fruit, and spices like sea salt or cinnamon. Turns out real food ingredients actually taste really good. Whether you like sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit flavors, I kind of go back and forth. I mix it up, but sometimes I'm, you know, on the sweet and savory side, I'm on the chocolate side, the fruit flavors. But there is an RX bar for you. There's 14 delicious flavor varieties. Some of them are mango, pineapple, chocolate, hazelnut, peanut butter, and berries. And more, you'll never get sick of them. That's what's good about it. Like, you will not, there's not like, there's enough that you can keep mixing it up. And by the time you come back to another one, you're ready for it. They're gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, all the good frees. All the things that you want that are free, it's in there. There's no artificial colors, artificial flavors, preservatives, or fillers. It's great for breakfast on the go, snack at the office to push you through your 3 p.m. slump, throw it in your bag for the plane, toss in your backpack for a bike ride or hike. Pre and or post-workout snack. I sometimes do both. Egg white protein stands out as a source of protein that is easy for your body to absorb. Good quality protein is very important. There's so many inferior quality proteins out there in a lot of other bars. So that's super important to me. I've been really into the peanut butter chocolate lately because it gives me that chocolate fix and I don't feel guilty. And isn't that the most important thing? But you can get 25% off your first order. Visit rxbar.com/benefits and enter promo code benefits at checkout. That's rxbar.com/benefits and enter promo code benefits at checkout. All right, let's get into my, what did we say it was? Q&A with Freddie Alva. The first thing I asked Freddie was how the New Breed documentary came about and how long it took to make.
The New Breed documentary came about from hanging out with my friend John Woods in 2014. That was the 25th anniversary of the New Breed comp. And we were talking about getting together some of the people that were on the comp tape and getting their feedback on those times and where they are now, film them, and put up like short 5-7 minute clips on YouTube. By coincidence, Gingy Brown from Absolution happened to be in town. He lives out of state now, but he was around that week we decided to do these interviews. So I got in touch with him and he agreed to meet us. And we did a really great interview. He's a really articulate person, awesome stories and commentary on those times. And that 5-7 minute thing we were thinking of doing turned to a 40-minute interview. And we realized there was a really good material here to make something bigger, like a full-length documentary. John had experience doing film. He works in the film industry, was in the process of doing a graffiti documentary at the time. So he knew how to put the pieces together. So we quickly drew up a list of about 20 people that we wanted to interview, people that played in bands on the compilation tape, people that did fanzines around that time, and also people that did record labels that put out those bands from those times. And we just started interviewing people and getting sort of a laser focus on the specific time period, meaning the years 87 to about late 89, from the inception of the compilation tape till when it came out. And that period happened to coincide with a specific time and place in changing of the guard in New York hardcore. So with the benefit of hindsight, we can definitely see how things evolve and how the new breed played a role in that development. I would say it took about a year and a half for the documentary to come together. John became the director of the documentary. I was a producer. And we drew up basic 10 questions for all the people that interviewed, and then do some freestyle of the answers. And the interview process became relatively easy. We had a facility for people to come to be interviewed, and they couldn't come to us. We had the ability to take equipment to them to interview them. So that came off really well. The biggest hurdle was finding a right editor for this. We went through two editors who, for whatever reason, couldn't really grasp what we were trying to do and put everything together to flow seamlessly. So that was, it took us about a good 8 months, 8 to 10 months to find someone that would edit the whole thing, till we found Orlando Arce, who was just incredible as far as totally getting what we were trying to do and putting all these different, by that time we had about a good 24, 28 hours of recorded interviews, and we wanted to do like a 60-minute documentary. So to edit all that, plus all the footage that John Woods had from his own personal collection as far as hardcore shows and flyers and mementos from those times, to put all that together, it just takes a lot of burning the midnight candle and just making sense of the whole thing. So I would say good year and a half from late 2014 till we finally finished it in 2016, and we screened the documentary in that time period.
Then I asked if there was anyone that he wanted to get for the documentary but couldn't for any reason.
The only two people I can think of that we had in mind to interview and politely decline is Ray Parada, the singer for Abomination, and Lou Dimmick from Our Gang. They both felt uncomfortable being on camera, so we respected the decision. Would have loved to have them, but just it just is what it is. Everyone else that we asked were more than happy to be involved. Most of them have really fond memories of being on the comp and are proud of their involvement with it. And over time, the comp has grown in stature. So definitely a lot of people have no problem being associated with it. So pretty much everyone from our short list that we thought of that we wanted to be for the documentary agreed to do it. So that's came off like a really, really great thing.
Then I wanted to know if he learned or rediscovered anything revisiting that period in hardcore, since it was the late 80s and a lot of time has passed, and kind of if anything came to light or came to the surface from kind of revisiting all of that.
Like I said before, the benefit of hindsight is a really useful thing. So we can look back on those times now and we can see how the the tape coincided with a change of the scene circa 87, 89. And that's exactly when the bands involved with the compilation were around. And those years happened to coincide with my own involvement with the scene. So I always looked at the compilation tape as sort of my hardcore high school yearbook. A lot of my friends that I knew that getting into the scene circa 85, 86, by 89, late 89, a lot of them were dropping out of hardcore moving on to jobs, family, the military. So that sort of reflected the changing of the guard aspect that out of 20 of the bands that were on the comp in 1888, by late 89, in the beginning of 1990, a good two-thirds of them had broken up and just disappeared, which is a shame because a lot of them had incredible potential to do amazing recordings. But what I learned from looking at those ebb and flow of history, things didn't really die out by that time period. By the time 1990 came around, there was sort of a new chapter of bands sprung up in the New York hardcore scene. And a lot of them, the newer bands, happened to have members that played in bands on the on the Newbury comp. For example, members of Life's Blood and True Colors, our gang from the comp, they started a band called Born Against, who were extremely influential in the 1990s. Also, people that played in Collapse on a Newbury comp started Quicksand, who are also hugely influential in the post-hardcore 1990s scene. So we can see sort of like the seeds and the rebirth of different aspects of the subculture as the scene transitioned into the 90s and beyond. That era of hardcore was instrumental in keeping the torch alive during the 90s as the advent of stuff like alternative music, grunge, metalcore, pop punk, and what have you. I think people looked towards that specific sound from that time and place to keep a very strong identity of what New York hardcore is. And these days, that NYHC has become a genre of its own. And I think it owes to the pioneers from the 82-87 scene, the second wave in 85-86, and what I always consider the bands on the comp, the 2.5 wave of New York hardcore that just brought all these elements together that made the spirit and the flame to be kept alive.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I asked if there was anything that he didn't expect or wasn't prepared for when putting together the documentary.
I think the editing process was the biggest learning lesson I could take from this whole experience. You can have the most incredible footage and the best of ideas, but to edit the whole thing into something that doesn't drag on for, you know, hours and hours, which we could have, because we have so much good stuff, and it's just painful to cut out what to leave out, what to put in. That just takes hours of pulling hair out of your head, trying to decide what's best to make the story flow better, and also to keep it nice at a nice length. Sort of like a hardcore song, so short, direct, to the point, but still with meaningful, and with context that resonates with people. And the whole process taught me a lesson when I was later on, a couple of years later, after the documentary, I was writing a book that coincidentally was inspired by a section on the documentary, mainly the graffiti influence in New York hardcore bands. and I turned that into a book. So, also a lot of people from the documentary were graffiti writers, and they're also interviewed in my book, which is called Urban Styles. So the editing process of doing a documentary taught me how to do the same techniques for editing when I was doing the book. So I think it was a great learning curve, and knowing when to step back, let the story flow, and also step in to cut it pieces that don't fit as well. So that was a great enriching experience.
I switch gears a little bit here because I'm just, you know, selfishly curious about Chinese medicine and acupuncture. And so I asked Freddie, who is a practitioner, if there's any misconceptions when it comes to Chinese medicine or alternative medicine.
I think the biggest misconception regarding Chinese medicine is expectations as far as the outcome or lack of. And they can range from one extreme being expecting Chinese medicine to be an incredible balm cure for everything under the sun, which unfortunately is not true. Or the opposite, polar opposite of looking at Chinese medicine as a quack, like inconvenient science that doesn't work, and when it does work, it's just a placebo effect, which is also not true. I find Chinese medicine, like any other medicine, would work best at different circumstances, and will also work best in conjunction with other modalities. I specialize in a lot of pain relief, stress reduction, and I find it working at doing acupuncture and Chinese medicine alongside modalities such as chiropractor or physical therapy, somatic therapies, to work the best as far as chances of the outcome. So there are a lot of misconceptions as Chinese medicine moves into the mainstream, but I see parallels in the chiropractors when about maybe 60, 80 years ago, when they were on the outside of, on the outskirts of medicine, regarded as just weird quacks. And now, you know, chiropractors are totally embedded in the system, in the medical system. And I find acupuncture slowly progressing towards that goal. It's not there yet, but has made huge leaps and bounds in the past 20 years. So I would give it another another decade, so people can just won't think twice about getting a massage and getting a chiropractor adjustment, getting a physical therapy, and also incorporating acupuncture into the routine to heal whatever chronic or acute ailment they might have.
And then I just asked Freddie if there's anything that he wanted to add, because, you know, this is not a standard conversation, so I want to make sure I wasn't missing anything, and he got to say everything that he wanted to say. And also make sure to check him out on Twitter, FreddieAlva_NYC.
I want to thank you for your interest in doing this interview about what's essentially sort of a weird, odd man out kind of thing, a whole documentary based on a very anachronistic item like a cassette. Also a compilation of something that's, you know, in the digital age has, you know, gone the way of the buffalo. So thank you for your interest, and also everyone who has been interested in watching the documentary. And I've always, through the years, I've heard people describe the New Breed tape compilation as the best tape compilation ever. And I'm, you know, very flattered to hear that. But I have to say, that's simply not true. Nothing comes out of a vacuum. There were tons of, literally thousands of tape compilations in the 80s that came out, the most notable ones that inspired me to do our tape compilation were tapes like the Guillotine compilation from 1985, put out by Wendy Eager. Just one of the first tape comps that I bought when I was getting into hardcore. And with limited resources, the option of paying $4 for a 7-inch or $7 for an LP as opposed to $3 for a 90-minute cassette comp was just, you know, obvious. So tape comps has always fascinated me. There are some incredible ones out there from the ones I can name off the top of my head, like No Core from 82, the Char Remains compilation from 84, the World Class Punk from 84. There are literally hundreds of them, and a lot of them up on YouTube. You can search for them. A lot of them up on blogs. You can download. I actually did an article on tape compilations called In Praise of Hardcore Tape Compilations that you can look up. And there's a great Facebook page called 1980s Hardcore Tape Compilations. So there's so much out there. The beauty of hardcore in the 80s and 90s, that it was so worldwide that it rivals the garage rock scene in the 60s, where every garage had like some bands jamming out and recording something. Hardcore had the same thing. There are thousands of bands that only did demos or rehearsals. And fortunately, a lot of the compilations from those time period captured that and recorded them for posterity. So I would just encourage everyone to go out there and search and hear all these wonderful nuggets from the past that has stood the test of time. You put on a lot of these bands from back then, and they sound as relevant as anything coming out today. Maybe even more so, but I'm biased in that. I like all the older hardcore stuff the best. So thank you, Jason, for these wonderful questions, and also for allowing me to talk a little bit about my side job, which is doing acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine. So thank you for that, and be well, everyone.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7. So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.